From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. On Monday, Juneau policymakers took a big-picture look at two cruise industry infrastructure projects. One, a city-owned dock for small cruise ships, and the other is Norwegian Cruise Line's plan to build a private cruise ship dock in downtown. KTOO's Jeremy Shea reports.
Norwegian Cruise Line likely has several years of work to do before it can begin building what could be a fifth dock for big ships in downtown Juneau. On Monday, Juneau City Manager Rory Watt laid out which steps intersect with city government and where the Assembly can make or break the plan. First, Watt recommends the Juneau Assembly change the city's long-range waterfront plan to allow a large cruise ship dock at Norwegian's property. That plan affects whether the Juneau Planning Commission approves or rejects permits. As is, Watt says the plan is unclear about if the dock would be okay. Unchanged, Watt thinks the plan would lead the Planning Commission to debate that point.
And I don't think that's really helpful. I think the discussion, if this gets to the Planning Commission, is should a dock be permitted, and if so, with what conditions?
Changing the waterfront plan requires a lot of public process. Watt estimated that step alone would take 6 months. The city also owns the tidelands that Norwegian would need to build its new dock, and it's up to the Assembly to decide how to negotiate that. If the project gets to that point, Watt recommends leasing the tidelands to the company. Assembly has at least one more pressure point. Norwegian stock would impact the neighboring U.S. Coast Guard and National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration facilities, and the city is in the early planning stages for a new dock that would also neighbor these federal facilities. That means Norwegian, the feds, and the city would all have to work out an agreement. Watt says negotiations with the federal government won't go well without strong support from the Juneau Assembly. Assemblymember Christine Wall asked,
do we have any idea what kind of timeline we're working on for all of these steps?
A long timeline.
Watt says these are slow processes. Working through them is likely to take years. One reason he's laying this out now is so the public knows the city's role, and not just Norwegians.
I don't know that the public clearly understands how and when to communicate to their elected officials. So I think this will help the public to know when to comment to you.
The Assembly plans to take public comment on Watt's recommendations at its meeting next Monday. Juneau Docks and Harbors officials also walked the Assembly through a recent report on how to address small cruise ships' needs. Consultants with the McKinley Research Group spent much of last year collecting data about this part of the cruise industry. Heather Hoagland with McKinley says small cruise ship passengers account for less than 2% of all cruise ship passengers, but they generally spend more while they're in town.
Largely due to hotel stays, right? Because almost all of them are going to stay at least a night, if not longer.
These ships compete with other vessels for a place to tie up. Docks and Harbors Board Chairman Don Etheridge says a new float for small cruise ships would help those users too.
We turn away fishing vessels, we turn away tenders, we turn away private yachts because we just don't have the room for them during the peak season.
There are several places a new float could be built. The option the Docks and Harbors Board likes best is downtown. It would require working with Gold Belt, which has a vessel float nearby that would have to be extended. Federal, state, and local agencies all have permitting rules. But it would also make small cruise ship operations more efficient, improve passengers' experience, come with new parking, and bring more business to town. And it would make it easier to connect two disjointed pieces of the city's seawalk. It could cost more than $25 million. It's just conceptual for now, but Etheridge says the money could come from cruise ship revenue.
It's, like I said, it's in its infancy, so I think we got a ways to go yet.
The Assembly was receptive to the idea. Etheridge says Docks and Harbors officials will come back to the Assembly for more discussion. In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Earlier this year, city workers installed a new public art project in downtown Juneau. They are new signs that feature QR codes. Scan them and you'll be taken to an audio story about the place, each told by people who represent the spirit of Juneau. I spoke to the artists involved for this story. Take a stroll along some of Juneau's downtown streets and you'll find brand new signs with maps and information about each location. But the signs do more than just tell you where you are. Each one tells an oral history about the place as part of an audio storytelling project called Juneau Voices. 10 stories are narrated by people from throughout Zantakahini, or Juneau, whose family histories go back generations.
A traditional name for Juneau is Stakat'at The place that has everything.
A place of abundance. Fish, deer, doll sheep, forests, gold, and stories.
That was Kingishche, the late David Katzik and Aaron Tripp, whose Tlingit name is Khatnuk. Kingishche is part of the Eagle Moiety. Khatnuk is part of the Raven Moiety. Together, Eagle and Raven guide the listener through this sonic journey. Lillian Petershore is one of the artists who helped with Juno Voices. She says the project is meant to tell rich stories about the diverse experiences of local people.
The stories are a wonderful cross-section featuring oftentimes lesser-known stories and lifting up people's experiences so that local residents and visitors can have a better understanding and appreciation for the diverse people that live in this community.
Petershore says one of the lesser-known stories is A Tale of Two Statues near Alaska's Capitol Building, narrated by Sorrel Goodwin. One of the statues sits in front of Alaska's Capitol of William Seward. The other isn't there, or at least not yet.
American imperialism hurts all of us.
Both the colonized
and the colonizer.
And that statue makes me angry. You know what I'd like to see right there? Across from the Seward statue? A statue of Sheep Creek Mary.
Sheep Creek Mary was Goodwin's great-great-grandmother, also known as Mary James, who took a stand against the Gastineau Mine Company that eventually forced her to sell her land. Petershore says it's important to tell these stories.
Because either the listener is living on Tlingit Ani, or they are visiting Tlingit Ani. And it's so important to understand the indigenous people of the area.
Ryan Conroe, an artist with Juno roots, also helped facilitate the project.
You could almost think about radio drama or podcasting with sound design and music to illuminate their stories.
He says it started when he met Petershore in 2018. The city had already initiated the idea of creating a signage project to help visitors find their way. Over the course of several months, Conroe and Petershore hosted story circles around town and put together what represents the breadth and depth of the city's history. The project was delayed by the pandemic, but is planned to officially launch in March. Petershore says she hopes the city can put up more signs with stories around the rest of the borough in the future. In Zanta Kahini, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña. In other news, President Biden and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have issued orders requiring masks for most people traveling on public planes, trains, boats, and road vehicles. The measures are meant to slow the spread of COVID-19. The orders also say transportation companies have to make sure passengers are wearing face coverings while traveling, and also in transportation hubs like airports, bus terminals, and seaports. It's not a big change from the current practice in Alaska. The Alaska Marine Highway System has required masks for passengers on the state ferry fleet since June. Department of Transportation spokesperson Sam Dapsevich says the system has seen good compliance.
There's some teeth behind it now. There is the potential, you know, that someone could be subject to penalties under federal law now. But the primary way that we take care of this message on the ferries is by making announcements and having good signage up and reminding people. You know, we don't have aggressive enforcement, but we make sure people know it's required.
The orders also mean masking is now required on the Inter-Island Ferry Authority's service between Hollis and Ketchikan. The biggest noticeable change with the federal orders are the mask requirement is now extended anywhere on the premises for travel hubs like airports, train, ferry, and bus terminals. As of February 1st, the Transportation Security Administration is implementing the mandate on airport properties throughout Alaska. That means it's required to get past the security checkpoint. A spokesperson for Alaska Airlines says the vast majority of its passengers are complying with a face covering policy that the airline has had in place since August. The airline gives a final warning in the form of a yellow card to passengers who continue to refuse. After that, they can be banned from travel on the airline. System-wide, Alaska Airlines reports 342 people in that category. The new federal orders are expected to make it easier on flight crews enforcing the company's policy, and they're now cited on the airline's website. This is KTOO News.